This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
In December 2020, last year, just about a year ago, I closed a 52-unit syndication, 52-unit apartment complex, $3.2 million. I raised $1.4 million in 30 days, and it came from an email list that I built from my website that I don't solicit. I don't do that much marketing for, right? I just put it on there, and then if you find my Facebook or you find me on Bigger Pockets or you find me on a podcast, you might go there and sign an email list. I don't do any pop-ups. I don't really send that many emails out, to be honest, right? But I got a somewhat reasonable sized email list. And so I shot it out and said, I'm buying this deal. Who wants to get in? And $1.4 million in cash came in, mostly from people who I've never met.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with a friend and seriously amazing content creator, Alexander Felice. Some of you guys may know him from Bigger Pockets. If you've been to BPCon or hang out on Bigger Pockets virtually or just hang out on Facebook, Alex puts out a lot of great content, but he's also hilarious. And you hear that through the show today, but just has a great, like, different type of non-straight laced outlook on life and real estate that he's really refreshing, actually. But we talk about all things. You can go back. He's actually a second time guest on the show. His first episode was strictly about real estate stuff, digging into how he got started, how he scaled with very little money, how he started getting into multifamily, how he started with Bigger Pockets. This episode was a little bit more focused on branding, networking, creating content, raising money, a little bit more like business skill focus, but just still a great time. I highly, highly recommend you guys check this one out on YouTube if you have a chance. We talk a lot about he redid his whole studio. He did it on a pretty, well, I was going to say tight budget, but he did splurge on a couple little extras, but the quality is amazing. Like, he could do high quality like TV in this studio, but it really made me realize I need to step up my studio game. But anyway, you could just see how clear it is. And he's also very open and helpful if anyone has questions reaching out about content creation. But just a great guy, going to be doing more with Alex in the future, but really cool story also because he didn't come from any money. He came from a very, I would say, just like normal background, normal situation. And then beyond that, he started spending money and kind of got into a little bit of a tougher situation in life. And then from there, picked himself up, got out of it, joined the military, got into real estate investing, and then now has an amazing business. He's got a 24 unit, a 52 unit, owns eight houses. One of the most well-networked people I know. He's got an amazing photography business. He's got a book club. Like I said, creating a lot of different content and just really good stuff. So that's kind of the gist of the episode. The main learning I was thinking through as this was going on, we were just talking, was building your brand around who your ideal listener or audience member is. And this is something that, like, I've struggled with, and he talked about struggling with a little bit as well, that if you're trying to raise millions of dollars, there is a professionalism that you probably should bring to the table if you want to have the best results. It's kind of the reason that doctors wear lab coats and lawyers put their degrees on the walls and, you know, they have a suit. It's because it represents and signifies, you know, you're important, but also that you're professional and you're going to take care of the people that give you money to do deals with. But if your brand is anti-corporate America, anti-job, anti, you know, establishment, then you can get by with a very different brand and a very different look. You still want to create professional looking content, but yourself, your brand can be very different. And that's what, like, I had to realize. I was coming from a very corporate background, but the people that like my message are not typically corporate and they're typically very young. So for me, it was a little bit of a change, and also realized that, like, I got happier when I was more connected with the audience I was trying to serve. So that's important there. Today's tangible tip from Alex, and he's just, again, like, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode, but he's definitely like a life learner. He's always learning. and something that we talk about on the show, and this is a great tangible tip, is to learn however you can. Like, take a moment today to see and think about how you learn best. You might not learn best from books. You might learn best from podcasts or YouTube or talking to people or taking action. But a lot of people just preach, you need to read to be successful. I got down that path too. And you know what? I was reading and I was learning a lot. And it did help me get to where I am today. But I probably could have learned maybe faster, more effectively by networking harder at the beginning and by watching more video content and taking more action. Like, those are the ways that I realized I learned. For now, for me right now, reading is a good way to learn, but it's probably the slowest way to learn. And, you know, time is money. So trying to cut that time down, that's pretty much it. So that's today's tangible tip. Learn however you learn best. It's not going to be the same for everyone, but figure out what it is for you and just double down on that so you can get smarter instead of just trying to read to read or learn to learn. That's an expression that someone once told me, and it really stuck. You want the information to come into your head for a reason so you can apply it. That's it, guys. Without any further ado, awesome episode today with Alexander Felice. Enjoy. Alexander Felice, bro, welcome back to part two. We just had to record because we were just having a great little vibe before hitting it and just didn't want it to go on any longer without the people getting to hear and listen in, man. But what's going on? How are you, dude?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me. Very, very honored to be here and do a part two with you. And you're right. We are in a super good vibe and we are bringing that to the airwaves right now. I'm hyped.
All right. The first thing that I said when we jumped on, for those that are listening to this, you're going to need to and want to check this out on YouTube, because Alex has probably, I'm not even saying this just for bullshit here, in like, I don't know how many episodes we've done now, maybe like 200 something, you know, this might be the best audio and video looking setup I think we've seen. And mine is shot right now. I'm in Colombia, lighting horrible, my mic, but dude, can you, I mean, this could be a good segue into like your business journey, your life. You know, people can hear the real estate kind of deep dive of all this, but I know your passion is like photography and like design and creativity, but like one, like, dude, I know you are into the real estate world more with like video and like content, but like, what's going on with that side of your life right now too? Studio, but also like content in general, because I've been seeing more what you've been doing. It looks awesome.
I got a lot going on. You didn't actually ask me a question just there. You kind of rounded out about four or five questions.
We'll just combine them, bro.
I'm just going to run with that. Okay. So I'll give you the origin story of the camera. So 2015, I'm buying real estate, right? And I was like, man, here's in my head what I wanted. What I wanted was to buy 10 houses over 10 years. I wanted it to be long-term rentals, passive. And then I wanted it to give me enough free time so that I could go do what I wanted with my life. Well, then I said, okay, this is going to start working out. Well, what the heck am I going to do with all my free time? I don't actually know, which is a very common problem that people don't actually spend enough time to address. They're like, I want freedom. What do you do with the freedom? They're like, I'll do something. Right. That's actually a harder problem to solve than people think. So I went off and I said, I've always kind of been into cameras, but I've never been good at it. Let me go get a camera. So I got a little DSLR and was terrible at it, but like real estate or, you know, for me, books or anything that you want to get good at and make like a life out of, you get better. And so here we are 6 years later and like, dude, I got cameras now. I got cameras and lenses and toys. And I understand, what it means. I understand now that cameras are not really about cameras. They're about lighting and composition. And so I took that when I started making content and I said, man, content is, in many ways, it is the future. It's not the only future, but it's a big part of the future. I mean, they're talking about remote work. We're all doing podcasts. You have this great podcast. People see you every week. They're watching you on YouTube. And I thought to myself, I'm like, it's one thing to just have up a nice camera, but that's not really, it's the same thing with people they go, I'm going to go buy a nice camera. And then you still take lousy pictures. It's not about the camera. It's about the whole set, composition, lighting, color, contrast, all these things that I've been learning. So I said, man, why, when you walk into a doctor's office, right? He's got his plaques on the wall. He's got his books on the shelf. Why? Because he's trying to create an aura and tell you who he is. I'm a legitimate dude who has taken this very seriously and you can trust me. And I think to myself, I'm like, man, podcasting content is going to be the exact same way. When you show up and you're like, okay, I'm going to talk to Alex. The first thing that everybody says is, bro, that setup is dope. which is perfect because I'm so dope. And so I know that I'm doing an accurate representation of who I am when I have it set up this way. And so I think actually for your set, for you, I'm going to hit you straight. And then for anybody who's listening, if you're doing content, you're doing podcasting, you know, you now have a friend who knows cameras. I'm not telling you to go off and learn cameras. And like a lot of this stuff is an expensive, this is expensive equipment, mm-hmm. but you don't need that much expensive equipment. What you really need to understand is the biggest change in this room came when I went long ways and I painted the back wall black and I painted the wall side walls white. That's the biggest actual change was paint, which is cheap.
Not what I was expecting.
Right. Visually, it's hard to understand that. But if I put the old, if I put a different, you know, if I put the old light up, it'd still be 90% of the same. And if I put a cheaper camera on there, it'd be 90% the same.
What we might need, and we were doing it before, because we were just talking about this, was we may need a picture. We'll link it in the show notes just to see what you're doing on that side of the camera. Because, like, again, it's really solid. Actually, dude, this is a good segue, though, because I could not agree more with what you're saying about content is the future. We're doubling down on content. We think content is, like, the path to everything. It's sales, it's marketing, it's first impressions being easier, it's networking. Like, it's just resumes and interviews and like first calls, I think, are like completely changed forever because of content. But like, for you, one question I'm curious with, and we were talking about a little before too, of like your raw style and like your real style on Facebook, is how do you balance, like, you see so many people in real estate talking about you got to be a professional, wear a button down, like you got to kind of, you know, raise money from people, and your setup shows that, but you don't seem to me like the suit and tie guy, but like some people in real estate talk about that. So like, how do you balance, like, you know, putting out content that's real for you and also showing people that you are legit, because you are legit, you've done a lot of deals and like well-spoken, well-polished, well-networked, but like, you know, there's like levels to it of some people might think like, oh, you got to be this way to do real estate.
So full disclosure, I told you the show, I actually just joined a firm, an existing firm called Climb Capital. Very excited. I'm going to do basically marketing. I'm going to work on as their marketing side. And one of the things they asked me straight up is they're like, look, we want you to be a little less crass on the internet when you do podcasts and you represent Climb Capital, maybe a little less swearing. Right. I'm not trying to change you, Alex, but maybe a little less of, you know, obnoxious, you know, unnecessary crass, which I said, you know what, it's probably time for Alex to mature a little bit anyway. So I'm cool with that, but I'm not showing up here in a tie and I'm still me. Right. So I guess what I mean is, okay. So who are you trying to reach? That matters. Right. If you're trying to educate young people about how to get started in real estate, these people who are in their 20s, like, you don't need a tie. That's going to turn them off. Right. You need to relate to them. If you're now somebody like me, who's now my next audience is probably going to be doctors and dentists who have excess capital in the hundreds of thousands of dollars who want to place it with responsible operators, then yeah, maybe a tie starts to make a little bit more sense. So I think a lot of it depends on who you're talking to, but let's be really clear. These are first impressions only. These are for first impressions only. When you really get to talk to somebody in a nuanced environment, you talk to somebody for even an hour, at least me, I'm a human BS detector, bro. I know who you are in an hour. I can tell if you're selling me some nonsense real fast. Now, maybe not everybody's got that gift, but over time, you're gonna find out who somebody really is. Are they wearing a shirt and tie because their personality is stuffy? Or are they doing it because they think they're supposed to? Like you said, somebody told you like, oh, you got to go wear a suit and tie. Are you wearing a rip jeans and a tight t-shirt like I do because you're rebelling against the system, you know, for no actual reason and you're just being obnoxious? Or is it just what feels comfortable and looks best on you? So there's a lot of variables to it, but I will say, like, I'm a very theatrical guy, as you can see from the setup. But when you get down to talking to me, you're going to find out real fast that I have high morals. I know really deeply what I'm talking about in both real estate and finance. You know, I was an underwriter for SBA lending. I have a degree in finance. I've studied, you know, I know this stuff. So I think there is definitely a gap between attracting people based on, you know, that initial reaction about like, who, you know, boom, here's my persona. And then once you get people to have a conversation with you, that's when it really matters. Yeah. So I'm so much more worried about the steak than the sizzle. I happen to be good at sizzle, but the cool thing that I try to do is like, hey, I'm gonna get your attention with this audacity, this audacious personality. But when you talk to me, I'm gonna show you that I'm actually super real.
Yeah. I mean, what, dude, like we talked about a little in the first one, but you can do both, which is probably why this company, you know, sought you out, because you can get attention, and a lot of people can get attention, you know, and just be like, you know, make noise on the internet. But then what you're doing or can do, like, no, like people probably wouldn't expect that you were an underwriter, had a finance degree. Like you can then back it up and like talk the talk. So you can get the attention and then you can back it with actual real estate knowledge, with understanding of the numbers, with like knowing how things work, being an operator. So like that's unique, but I think most people, you know, they maybe just try for like one or the other. But I think the other thing is, so that's just interesting. I never really knew that myself, but then what, go ahead.
Well, but real quick, what I think people should focus on is knowing what they're talking about. If you can learn and get experience and really know what you're talking about, then you will have the confidence to go be loud about who you are into the world. If you are just loud and you don't know what you're talking about, that's called fraud. And it will catch up to you. There's a very low ceiling for fraud. I mean, there's only a couple of Bernie Madoffs out there, right? Most people who are selling scams don't go far. So really learn what you're doing. And then when you know and you're confident, you have some experience, then you'll feel confident to go out there and be like, okay, now I can be loud as hell.
Yeah, that makes total sense. That's a really good point, that you can take a little more liberty when you know you can back it, you know, or you have some experience. Was that something that like you struggled with at all, or thought about like, you know, changing earlier, ever questioning? Because what you just said at the beginning, I thought was really important. I struggled with it, of like, who's my audience? Who am I talking to? I started out thinking I was going to do the traditional syndicator route, and I was doing the shirt and tie. I came from corporate. I was pretty corporate. You know, now I look back at that, I'm like, fuck that. Like, I don't want to do that. So, but now I realize my audience is millennial. So like I wear a t-shirt every day. Like I don't need to shave. Like my hair is, you know, whatever. And now, but I didn't realize that at the beginning because I didn't know who I was talking to. And I also didn't really know what I was even talking about. But I think like to that point, learning that helped me. But I was questioning it for a long time and going back and forth on it. So like, how did you figure that out? How did you like not question that?
Okay, let's see. So I was in my 20s and my late 20s, and I was wearing ties all the time. And I was selling cars, making like 80 grand a year. And I was so arrogant, and I actually wasn't that good at life, right? I was serious. I was not that good at life. I was not saving any money. I had no financial understanding, really. And I was making decent money in a small town. And I was, you know, when you're in sales, you get it to all egos, right? It's all egos. And I thought I was the man. And so I was exactly what I'm telling you not to do, right? I was all sizzle, no steak. Okay. And then life came along and smacked the ever living out of me. Right. And that's when I converted, and I was like, okay, dude, mad frugal, learn finance, go to school, get my degree, like really put the work in and get rid of the, you know, that audacity, just put my head down and get humble and like really learn how to win at life. And so 10 years later, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm not great. Right. There's a lot of people who are more successful than me, but I've got enough now where I'm like, okay, I do know what I'm doing. I am confident in what I am capable of, and my self-reliance, right? I don't need a job so much to like make ends meet, so I can be picky. And this allows me to kind of live a lot on my terms. So I'm not so much worried about what audience I'm talking about to. What I do is what I call outbound marketing, inbound marketing, where like I just do me. I call it being the beacon. I do me, and the people who are right for me find me. I'm not going like, oh, I'm going to go talk to millennials. I'm like, no, this is what I'm talking about. I'm going to do it so loud that the people who are listening for that are going to hear it. And they'll be like, oh yeah, Alex, that's the guy.
So it's funny because like we were talking about before, dude, that's the reason content is so amazing. Like you don't have to, there's not enough time for you to meet everybody, but there's in a way enough time for everyone to meet you if you put out content, and that can scale. But like, you can never meet, you know, 400,000 people, but you could have 400,000 followers that check out your story and your life every day. And then when they meet you, they feel like they know you. It's a weird thing. And if you do a deal, maybe they put money in, or maybe they can help partner with you on a deal. And like, that's just the power of it. So I really like, I never thought about it that way. The beacon that like, you just put light out and like who it hits and like, they'll come into your world. And you know, if they do, they do, if they don't, they don't, like, but at least you're putting it out there.
In December 2020, last year, just about a year ago, I closed a 52 unit apartment complex, $3.2 million. I raised $1.4 million in 30 days, and it came from an email list that I built from my website that I don't solicit. I don't do that much marketing for, right? I just put it on there, and then if you find my Facebook, or you find me on Bigger Pockets, or you find me on a podcast, you might go there and sign an email list. I don't do any pop-ups. I don't really send that many emails out, to be honest, right? But I got a somewhat reasonable sized email list. And so I shot it out and said, I'm buying this deal. Who wants to get in? And $1.4 million in cash came in, mostly from people who I've never met. Now these are people who I have relationships with. These are people who I've spoken to, not to say that these are strangers or people that I don't think seriously of. These are people who I'm very grateful for, and people who I'm hoping we make, you know, very long-term relationships. But it started from me just putting out my blog, and my blog is not an education about how to do real estate. It's like, this is how I did it. Mm. And so people, again, it's not a big audience, and I'm not, you know, being forceful. I'm just trying to say, I think a lot of people just need to have the courage to put their story online and put it on the line. And then the right people will resonate with it. If you make it a relatable human story, the right humans will come relate to it. It's not that complicated.
And you know what? To that point, people could probably get a ton of value in thinking about for themselves is, you know, the person that's done one deal has imposter syndrome when they compare themselves to the person that's done two and then three and four. And the person who has none, but, you know, has like a portfolio of stock or crypto or whatever, they've done more than the person's done nothing, where they just read the book. So like, I like that approach more of putting your story out there, because it's like, there's no, like, you know, Jeff Bezos may envy Elon Musk, and Elon Musk might envy a farmer who has no money. You know, like, everyone's looking over their shoulder at the next person, like, I can't do it because I can't create content because, but like that attitude of just putting out your story, it's so much like more, I would say, impactful, but it's also less like stressful in the sense of like worrying about, you know, what other people are going to think. One thing on that, I'm curious, like your take on this, or just the expression of like, there's like a balance between fake it till you make it and like just putting out content of like your story and what you're doing. So like, one, what do you think about that expression? Because you see a lot of people that are just putting out content, and maybe they do, maybe they don't know what they're talking about, but like they're trying. And then it's just like, some people, they're not doing it at all because, you know, they're too shy or not willing to like look bad on the internet.
Okay. So the second one, if you're not willing to look bad on the internet, or you're, you know, just worried about negative response like that, like I can't help you. You got it. Some people aren't cut for it. So sorry. They're not designed for it. They don't really want it. Not really. They know it's valuable, but they don't want the risk. I love putting stuff on the internet, especially when it's like, ooh, testy, right? I put stuff on the internet. People are like, ooh, I don't like what he said. I'm not talking about, you know, ridiculous political stuff. I just mean like on the line, or, you know, sometimes controversial, or sometimes just of high consequence, right? Serious personal thing. So I don't mind that. And if you do mind that, it might be a tough road for you. Now, a lot of those things can be overcome just by trying. For the first part about imposter syndrome, I suffer deeply, deeply, deeply from imposter syndrome. And, you know, people say, to your point, people look at me and they're like, okay, Alex has 8 homes, flipped a bunch of homes, has a 24 unit, a 52 unit, raised all this money. Like, he knows what he's doing. Why does he have imposter syndrome? And I'm like, oh, because the people I hang out with have thousands of units, of units, right? My buddy, Matt Faircloth, I just did a video marketing video for him. He just went under contract for 685 unit portfolio, and he's raising 28 million in liquid. And so like, who am I to teach? That guy should be teaching. But you know what that guy looks at? He looks at the next guy up. He looks at the Neil Bawa, who's, you know, raises 150 million. So the way that I kind of, and you know what, a lot of this is right. I mean, I'm just so annoyed sometimes by the 20 and 30 year old people who are teaching people how the world works. Life coaches. I have a girl who wants to be a life coach. I'm like, dude, I saw your life was a train wreck 8 months ago. Like, please stop. Right. Or the life coach. And then they quit because they got a divorce. I'm like, quit. Okay. Stop. So there is a lot of stuff where people shouldn't be, you know, the advice for imposter syndrome is just get over it. And I don't think that's bad advice. I think people should, if you have imposter syndrome, maybe you're right. Maybe you are an imposter. Just because you learned something yesterday doesn't mean you should be teaching it the next day necessarily. So the way that I've been able to kind of reconcile this is what you said, which is I no longer, my website, there's no education, right? There's no formal education. I don't have a course to sell you. I don't have a course to even give you. I'm going to tell you what I did, why it worked, more specifically what I did wrong, right? And then how that adjusted my thinking and what I'm going to do forward. And then, so if you look at Alex and say, well, I want to buy single family homes and then transition to multifamily and I don't have any yet, then you can come to my story and say, well, this guy bought 8 single family homes. Then he transitioned to 24 unit. Now he transitioned to 50 unit. And now he's going to join a private equity group who's doing thousands of units. And I can explain to you exactly each step about why I thought those things were good ideas and then why I changed my mind along the way. So I think if you want to get over imposter syndrome, don't try to teach people stuff because you might be teaching people stuff that's wrong. You very often are teaching people stuff that's wrong. Think about all the stuff your parents taught you, right? You're 15 years old. You're like, man, my parents know everything. Well, maybe not 15, 12, right? By 16, you're like, they don't know everything. By 30, you're like, damn, you guys are wrong about a lot, right?
Lisa, yeah.
At least for me. And so
totally.
Who, right? And so it's like, okay. So what I told you before the show is I'm not teaching people anything until this beard is white. Until then, I'm just going to tell you what I'm doing. If you look at me and say, Alex, you have some stuff I can learn from, then you can go learn it from the story that I'm telling, but I'm going to tell you along the way, like, hey, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea if I'm right. This is what I'm doing and why. And if it's valuable to you, take it.
So that said, where do you then go to get information? Because, you know, it is tough to figure out what's real and what's not a lot of times on the internet. And a lot of people give advice. A lot of people give bad advice. And the internet's a big place. And there's a lot of fake stuff on the internet too. So like, how do you go about getting advice or getting education on something that you're about to take on?
I think the internet has given us this little bad boy. This guy right here is the most valuable tool that has ever existed in human nature. It's also a terrible addiction that can be harmful. So you really have to use this thing with great care. But I spend an immense amount of time on Audible. What I have found is I don't really want to learn as much from podcasts and other people because of the same reason I just said. They might be teaching me something that's incorrect. So the kind of, this is a really big concept for me and I could go on for a long time, but the summary is I like to read books that have stood the test of time because the wisdom that's in books that have stood the test of time is generally more valuable. And so I try to read books from people who have passed away, authors who have passed away, specifically passed away. Why? Because they can't make any money on the book anymore. So the book must just be good.
Dude, that's so good. I've never thought about that.
Yeah. If I'm buying a book, and a lot of it is not like finance and real estate. A lot of it is life. And a lot of it is the thing about economics and finance is that it's cyclical, right? It's cyclical. And so straight up, you're not going to make your money at the top of the market. You're going to make all your money at the bottom of the market. That's just the way it's going to work. You're going to make all your money at the bottom. So how do you know when the bottom is? Well, the bottom doesn't go by any financial principles. It goes by human behavior. Emotions drive the market cycle. And so if you learn about history, you start to learn human behavior.
Totally.
And so that for me makes me feel more equipped than reading some book about how to do, you know, some specific thing about, you know, I was on the Bigger Pockets podcast about delayed finance principle. It's like, That little thing is neat and it's a trick, but it's going to come and go and it only works in certain, like Burr, right? It's not going to be around in 50 years. And it wasn't around 50 years ago. So for me, learning, you know, behavior of humans is going to help me make the best decisions about the future more so than the nuance of some small little principle. I think people get caught up in trying to, like, you know, you learn real estate and then they're like, well, I still want to do real estate, so I got to keep learning this one thing. The internet lets you learn a much broader set of lessons from the world. Like, the education is unlimited. I just got done reading a book about the Great Depression and how it was caused. And so it's like, is that going to help me learn about the next crash? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But that, it's not going to help me. Maybe it's not going to help me. It's not.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go, finish the thought. You're good.
Oh, I just mean, like, where do I go to learn? I try to learn from books, old books. And I try to meet people who are doing the thing that I want to do. And I try to have real conversations with them. The internet, dude, you can get on Twitter, you can get on Facebook, and you can, like, Josh Dorkin and I are friends now. Why? Just because I message him and ask him stuff. And now we're like, we're buddies, kind of, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the cool part of the internet.
You can get access to everybody. Yeah. You want to talk to Alex? Text Alex. You can text anybody. So, not to say that everybody's going to give you all the exact same time, but people, first off, people are egomaniacs. They want you to reach out and talk to them and tell them, you know, and ask them stuff. People want to help. So find the person who's doing what you want to do and reach out to them and be like, hey, you want to be friends? You want to, how can I, you know, and try to be genuine about it. And so I learned from those two sources mostly.
One, I think one, like, my version of the books that have held the test of time, but I never thought about it that way. That's going to stay with me, man. The fact that if they're not promoting their book, if it's an old book, like, that has held the test of time. It's just good. Like, the content is good. And most of today's content around, like, business or like the greats of the books or like concepts, it's recycled, you know, but like the OGs had it, like, they put it together themselves and, like, they didn't need to repackage it. They got it from somewhere, but, like, probably a very different way of organizing the information, but, like, it's held the test. What I had to change for myself with education was read less books, but understand the books better that I was reading. You know, I was doing it for the clout. I was doing it for just telling myself I read X number of books this year so I could sound like that asshole. But you know what? I needed to understand the information. Instead of reading a book a week, read two books a year, but understand every concept in it and apply it and take action with it instead of just letting it go in one ear and out the other and just putting it on Instagram. Like, that for me, and business got better too. Life got better because I was able to actually apply the concepts that, like, these smarter people were imparting on me. I think, in addition to, like, that one is great, and that this one is, like, my version, but I just think, like, when you start thinking a little deeper than, like, the surface of, like, just consume, just watch, just listen, but, like, you figure out what it is for you, you will have such a, like, a deeper impact or a deeper connection with the content.
Dude, the goal is not reading. The goal is learning. And they're very different. Yeah. I know people that burn through books and I'm like, you didn't learn anything. I don't care. I'm not impressed. I right. care about your ideas, not your, you know, your number. So what I recommend, what I do is every time I'm done with a book, I write the three things that I learned most, the three core topics. So when you write it and you have to, like, coalesce it in your brain and make it make sense, it really sticks deeper for me. So yeah. I write about books and then also, learning, not reading. I mean, you have to read to learn, but, like, I'm not reading for the sake of reading. I'm not reading for competition. I'm genuinely curious.
And I think what you mentioned, like, before too, of, like, how you learn is you probably, you know, you're 50-50, it sounds like, from books, but then talking to people, you know, and I think some people, it could be skewed way harder in different directions too. Some people could learn zero from books, but they could learn tons from video and audio, or they could learn from, you know, zero from video and audio and books, but 100% from action or 100% from talking to people. But it's just, like, realizing what it is. And to your point, it's the learning and the skills that you get, not, like, just chalking up that you did the thing that sounds cool that you heard, like Jim Rohn talk about once. I love Jim Rohn, but, like, you know, you could adapt it and apply it to your situation. He even says that, but, like, I think that's kind of, like, the core of, like, what I'm taking from what you're saying too, of, like, you gotta figure out what it is for you.
Yeah. And, you know, I started reading books that what happened was, I was listening to podcasts about real estate and I was getting good at real estate. And then I was like, okay, but now I kind of, It's not that complicated. I'm so sorry. It's just not a super complicated business. It's a fixed cost business. Income, fixed expenses, net profit. Like, there's just, it's not complicated.
Yeah.
It's not, it work, but it's not, it's hard, but simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then I was like, okay, but what else? I want to spend, I'm still curious. I still want to learn, but like this real estate thing, I kind of got it. Like now it's just a matter of like putting it into action. So then you start going through books, like self-help books. But the thing is, to your point about self-help, where it's like, okay, you need about three of them and then you're done with the entire genre because they all say the same thing, right? Take responsibility, get a good attitude, network, like, come on. And so what I found myself doing that I'm actually very still to this day, very surprised that I haven't seen other people do is I started going into harder, more complicated books about history, finance, and economics and philosophy. And if you really like self-help and you're mad that, like, you know, there's 10x rule, there's how to win friends, there's a couple of you know, grit, there's a bunch of them, but they all say the same thing. But if you like self-help and you're disappointed with the genre, go to philosophy, because it's the same thing written by people who actually think much deeper, who aren't trying to take your money. And the ideas are a lot more sophisticated. So like, instead of, you don't need, you know, instead of Grant Cardone, go Nietzsche, right? You want hype self-help. That dude wrote about 10 books and they're all incredible.
Who was right? that? And they are, what's the name?
Friedrich Nietzsche.
Okay. Gotcha. We missed it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's many others And so economics was the same way. Like, I don't really need to learn, especially for multifamily. Multifamily is not about the underwriting. It's about the macroeconomics, right? What are jobs doing? What's the interest rates doing? What are the demographics of the area? Like, the macro matters more. So I need to understand the macro. I need to understand macro more. So that means like, okay, I'm reading books about crashes. I'm reading books about Federal Reserve. I'm reading books about market cycles and behaviors. And, you know, a lot of it is political history. Past this prologue. So if you want to know where we're at and you want to know where we're going, you need to know how we got here. So mm-hmm. that turned into, you know, a lot of American economic history. And there's a lot of books out there to learn from, bro. And they make you deadly. But a lot of it is, like you said, you know, you got to go out there and kind of put the work in and really actually learn it, because there's nobody going to give you any clout for reading. Thomas Piketty wrote an amazing book called Capital in the 21st Century. About that, about yay thick, right? 800 pages or so. It's really important. It's really useful. It's not sexy. And so if you're here to do, you know, to look on the internet, like you said, what we talked about earlier about, like, look at me, these are the books I recommend, and I just want to get clicks. Like, that's not going to be a book, because nobody's going to go pick that up. Nobody who's not serious is going to go pick that up. But if you're serious, and I'm deadly serious, I'm going to read serious books. And if you want to be serious, I recommend you put the work in and read some stuff. You know, you got to grow into it, but, you know, once you have a good grasp of the self-help books and the real estate, it's like, go do something harder. There's a lot of hard books out there. And I have them on my website. A lot of them.
We'll link it.
Long book list on my website.
So I was just, do you know Ryan Daigle? He's in Raleigh. Okay. So Ryan,
I know everybody,
we're coming to networking next. That's going to, the time's already flying, but I definitely, that's something that we cannot go without talking about. But like, the thing that we talk about, we got tight when I was living in Raleigh, and we used to meet all the time, talk about business and just, like, you know, goals and all that. And real estate is simple. Like, once you've learned all the concepts, like, it's not that different. If it's RVs, if it's multifamilies, if it's storage, if it's Airbnbs, like, you're buying an asset, you're improving it, and you're running it, and it should make money or not.
Fixed costs.
Yeah, exactly. It's fixed costs. So, like, I think the curve, you know, and if someone, you know, disagrees with this, let me know. But I haven't read a real estate book in a long time, but I've read a lot of business books. I've read philosophy. I've read strategy books. I've read biographies. Because I felt like, you know, to your point, I deep dove all the real estate concepts, read the books, read probably 10 Bigger Pockets books, you know, and then like all the others that people recommended. But you learn the strategies, and then it's a matter of like, okay, do you have business skills? Do you have like operations? Do you have like other stuff that's not just like how do you put this screw into this bolt? Like, you can learn that and then do it. But what you're talking about is all of like the other soft skills that go with it, other than just like how to.
Well, not just the soft skills. Not learn from anybody in real estate who's been doing it since before the crash. Why? Because since 2010-9, the Federal Reserve dropped their interest rates to zero, and there's been, and they've started buying bonds. And I don't know if people don't know this. They don't know this, but the reason that everybody's been winning in real estate is because there's a government subsidy, a giant, endless government subsidy. You are not good. You are getting bailed out, essentially. You're getting tailwind forward. So that's something good to know, because then it prevents you from getting too arrogant about your own success. I'm not that good. I'm riding the wave of the economic market by the Federal Reserve interest rates. Guess what? The interest rates are about to go back up, and the fun and the party is going to be over. What is that going to look like? I don't know yet. But if you're not thinking about it or understanding it or paying attention to it, then you get that back to what we talk about, imposter syndrome, where it's like you very well might be an imposter and you don't have the knowledge to even know it, because you're not reading books that give you, you know, you're just like, okay, well, I bought this thing. It went up in value. Look how effing good I am. And it's like, no. The thing went up in value because the interest rates are so low, and the next guy can buy it at 4%, or the government's been subsidizing renters, you know, through stimulus and inflation. So rents have come up, but that ain't because you're good. You got bailed out, basically.
So
right, true. I bought a 24 unit. I sold it for 50% more than I bought it for in 2 years. Right? People go, oh my God, you made 50% for your investors in 2 years. You're so good. It's like, no, I bought a below average deal that I shouldn't have made money on. But I took a risk to learn. The market bailed me out. I made a bunch of money. I'm happy. That's part of it, right? You're always going to be playing in markets that aren't perfect. So you got to take the wins you can take, but to have a broader understanding means that I'm not going to get the ego check when things change, because I'm paying attention to them. So
I know we talked about this last time. This could be a whole, you know, deep dive segment in its own, but just like the concept of fooled by randomness. And right now,
Taleb is life.
I mean, his, if you're going to start anywhere on like non-real estate content, that could be one of the best places to start. But like, it does seem right now, like, you know, it's hard to imagine when the way that things have gone the last like 10 years, 12 years, that the government would let like another recession happen. And I think it may happen. It probably has to happen. But to your point, I think a lot of people are getting a little ambitious or a little excited or full of themselves based on what they've done, when they have not realized that concept. They think they are God. They think they're great when the high tide lifted their boat.
A little. You think they're getting a little arrogant? Oh, that's generous.
That's generous. Yeah, maybe a little more.
You said a very interesting thing. You said, "Oh, the government won't let a recession happen." You know, we're basically, not to get too much into this. The government should have raised rates in 2016 or 17. They tried to. They found themselves to be inept. The rates came back down. On COVID happened, they dropped them back down to zero. And we've stuck there. And so now we've become addicted to this crutch. Like, you're now subsidizing a market that's up. What happens when the market's down? You don't have the ability to re-stimulate the upswing. So one or two things is going to happen. They're going to raise rates. It's going to be painful. And the market will adapt over time, like it should. Or they're going to find themselves unable to raise the rates, and we're going to get into a hyperinflationary environment, and it's going to be cataclysmically bad.
Ah, man, Alex, I feel like, well, it's a good place to be right now if you're taking the right attitude and you're not getting too full of yourselves.
Cash will save you. That really, cash will save you. They say, oh, don't have cash because of inflation. I'm like, uh-huh. Cash will pay the bills. Cash will buy you out of it. It might lose 6% this year, but it gives you a lot of stability and safety.
Damn, Alex, the time just flew on this one, bro.
No, we're not done. We can go. We can be long. It would have to be a long episode,
dude. We got to do a part two because this, I don't want to short. I'm sorry, part two on this part two, bro. On just this, because we didn't even talk about networking and all this stuff, but bro, what's we're going to, like I said, we were talking about this before, we were talking to Dave about this, but we'll do more one podcasting, but just content in general. But for the topic of content, we talked a lot about it. What's the best way for people to find you or check you out?
The best way these days, the best way, Facebook or Instagram, probably. Mm-hmm. I am Alex Scott Felice on Instagram, and I'm Alexander Felice or Alexander Scott Felice on Facebook. That's okay. That's probably the best way. My website is brokeisachoice.com. I started that because I was broke for my whole life, and it was because I was making shitty choices. Straight up, I was making bad choices. I had cars and booze and cool stuff and no money, and I was living week to week, and it was because I was making bad choices. When I stopped making bad choices, I started building wealth. Actually, I think I'm gonna change the name of that website after 8 years. I think I'm gonna change the name of the website to something a little more mature, because Broke is a Choice is a little bit obnoxious, and it's not really talking to the audience that I want to talk to nowadays, which is a little more sophisticated, somebody who's gonna be able to be willing to give me 50 or 100 grand. So I think I'm gonna change it to Wealth is a Choice.
I like it. Dude, are you about to be wearing a suit? Are you about to be suited up, man?
Bro, I clean up so good. Even if I did wear a suit, you'd be like, I can't believe this guy can still, I'll wear a pink tie and a just obnoxious colors. Don't you worry about me. I'm gonna get your attention. Yeah.
You'll do it the right way. Alex, bro, you the man. I look forward to doing it again, and gotta get back to North Carolina, but always a good time. If anyone has any questions, hit Alex up, check him out on Bigger Pockets, check him out on Facebook, follow his stuff, check out his blog, check out his book list. We're talking a lot about books and education and content. Check that out.
This year, they're on Facebook, the Facebook group, The Great Book Club of Alexandria. I've been a lot more active on that. We're reading a book starting January 1 called Infinite Jest, which is a deep philosophical critique of American culture. It is the hardest book you'll probably ever read, but we're going to do it in a group setting. So if you want some help going through this 1100 page monster, we're going to do it together, but that's going to start January 1. Otherwise, there's a lot of other book content in there. So highly recommend people, if you want to talk about finance and philosophy and have, you know, those kind of conversations.
All right. Last question before the Zoom gets hijacked. How do you host that book club on an 1100 page book? I've done book clubs before, and it's like, we can't get people to finish a book in like 2 months. It's like 150 pages. What format are you going to do for that?
I don't know. I'm going to do a weekly Zoom chat. I'm going to do a weekly Zoom chat. And here's the thing. Here's the cool thing about the way I do it is, like, I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for me. I'm going to do it. You can come along.
That's the best.
I'm not a babysitter. Like, there is immense value in learning and in this book, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to hold people's hands along the way. I'm going to carry them. So, like, if you don't do it, I'm going to do it without you.
Dude, couldn't have said it better. That's just the best way to think about it. Then you won't be, I mean, I've done it the other way, and then I'm disappointed when other people aren't following along. Gotta do it for you. If people jump along, great. If not, you're still getting what you need out of it.
Dude, I'm going to win, and I'm inviting people to win with me. They're going to have to do something hard to win, but it's a valuable win. So come on the journey with me and I'll help. But if you don't want to win, then you go off and do whatever loser thing you're going to do. I'm going to win without you.
All right, Alex, you the man. I'll shoot you a text or DM follow up after this, bro. I got to hop off this now, but seriously, thank you again for coming on, bro.
Thank you.
And excited for part 3, part 4, and who knows how many more parts. You the man. Talk to you later.
You're the man. Be well.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.